people will say, why would you, when you're that small and you're a first-round pick in baseball, and baseball obviously is the sport where not only your career lasts the longest, you make more money per year than any other sport on average. I mean, think about this. Kyler Murray, with his signing bonus, has already made more than the average NFL career with his baseball signing bonus. And by the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ, KGMZ F1, HD1, San Francisco, your home of the Golden State Warriors. Rick Tittle with you live from Hooters, 7499 Dublin Boulevard. And the doors are opening as we speak. Come on in, watch a lot of NFL football, have some wings and drinks and such things. Kyler Murray, here's the thing. If you are a fantastic football player and you're also a fantastic baseball player, it's hard to give up the football. Because and the reason I say that is, and sometimes if you're just flat out smart, like a Joe Mauer, speaking of another Golden Gopher, like a Dave Winfield, you just know that's where your career is going to go. Remember, Joe Mauer was the number one quarterback in the nation as a high schooler. Talk about an athlete. He was also all-state basketball at St. Quentin St. Paul in the Twin Cities. But nothing gives you that type of competition like football does. That is the gladiator sport. That is our sport where you get the most glory. That's the tough guy sport. When you're a young man, and I know this is true for me, you wanted to compete. You liked the violence. Can I get over on you? You take on all comers on the field. There's something about that macho feeling. I know what it feels like at a D2 level. This is at a D1 level. And you are the man, the Heisman Trophy winner. So are you? Do you want to go, as Kyler Murray will, from the man, the leader of a football team, the best player theoretically in the country, to being the richest guy on the Vermont Lake Monsters rookie short season? And you're just a guy now, and you have everything to prove all over again. Well, Scott Boras is saying that's your only choice, because if you go play football, it's just not going to work out. Listen, Kyler Murray could go. He could get rejected. Remember Doug Flutie, what Doug Flutie was able to do at BC. He got drafted by the Bears. The Bears threw him right in. We couldn't believe. Remember that Monday night game when Doug Flutie started for the Bears? He looked like he was about 4'7". He hit his center, not even his tackle, on the back of the helmet. And everybody goes, "Up, there it is. He's too short to play in the NFL." Well, he didn't give up. He went to the Canadian Football League. He was fantastic. Came back. What, Bills, Patriots, Chargers? He had a nice little career in the NFL. If Kyler Murray is committed to playing football, he might have to do that. I don't know. The last thing I would want to see him do is switch positions. I would hate to see him do that. If you're a quarterback and they go, you know, now you got to play running back. Look, if you have absolutely no shot, I understand it. If you're a Jerry Porter or an Antoine Randall L, and it's like, look, you're going to play wide receiver or nothing. Those guys were okay college quarterbacks. But if you are the man, like Kyler Murray, and you do not get that same competition, you know, you're going to play in the New York Penn League short season for the Lake Monsters, and you're going to take that road trip to, you know, Burlington, Vermont, to play the, you know, the Hackensack Hackenbergs or whatever it is. That's not the same type of competition. So he's going to have to rewire his brain. I'm sure his brain already was rewired before this season began, but now you've got a lot of NFL experts, draft people saying, hey, I could see it possible. I'd like to see this kid play on Sundays. What a waste it would be. I think the best thing for Kyler Murray, at least as far as his career, obviously losing the game was a terrible thing for Oklahoma. And I was rooting for Oklahoma because of Kyler Murray. That was the only. And plus, you know, I admire Alabama. I like Najee Harris, the kid out of Antioch. But I've seen enough of Alabama, as a lot of us have, to the victor go the spoils, full props to the Tide. But I was rooting for Oklahoma. I thought it would be cool to see them come to Santa Clara and play the national championship. But for his career, I think the best thing that happened to Kyler Murray yesterday was that he didn't look fantastic. I think he showed a lot of heart. I think he showed his toughness. At one point, the helmet came off and people thought his head was still in it. I think he showed a lot of toughness, and he showed that he is a very accurate passer. I mean, his passer rating, the best all-time in the history of football. By the way, I don't understand passer ratings. 103.7 in the NFL. You can go over 200 in college. You can have a perfect passer rating when you throw an interception. Somebody explain that to me. I'll never understand that one. But the best thing for Kyler Murray to me was that I think every NFL scout who watched that game, and they obviously were, every GM, every football person from Pee Wee football and Pop Warner to a 100-year-old retired coach, we were all watching those games. And you looked at Kyler Murray and you thought, is this the guy that is going to lead us to a Super Bowl? And I doubt there was any team out there that thought, I have to have this kid. So I have no doubt he will be drafted. Teams throw away draft picks all the time on whatever, even if it's a seventh-round pick. Hell, you could see some teams so fired up, they'll take him in the second round. I don't know. I can't predict the draft. And guess what? You can't predict the draft either. We don't know what's going to happen. Maybe somebody is convinced that Kyler Murray is the guy. And then he's going to be faced with that choice, the Drew Henson choice, the Josh Booty choice, the Chad Hutchinson, Akili Smith, these guys who are so fantastic. And by the way, I don't feel sorry for a guy who's so good he can go pro in either sport. Because for the rest of us, we were not good enough to go pro in any sport. Believe me, you listening and me, if we could have gone pro, we would have. So I'm not the, oh, what a terrible problem for you to have. You can be a pro in two different sports. So Kyler Murray, and by the way, I think this is probably my favorite stat at the end of the game. And this might be a little cold-blooded, but Kyler Murray versus Alabama in baseball, two games, he was 0 for 8 for 3 strikeouts. So they're saying, you see, we even beat you in baseball. I think it's an amazing season for him. Nothing can take away the Heisman, which I think is one of the greatest trophies in all of sports. You know, as an American, if you offered me an Olympic medal or a Heisman, I would take a Heisman without blinking, even though people in other countries don't know what it is and they know what Olympic medals are. There's just nothing better than a Heisman. And we've seen a lot of Heisman Trophy winners not be great pros. We had a kid who went to my high school as a freshman, transferred to Pinole. He won a Heisman. Gino Toretta. We have a guy like Eric Crouch. I mean, the list goes Charlie Ward. There are a lot of guys out there. Josh Heupel. A lot of guys have won the Heisman, and they didn't go on to great pro careers. And that's fine, because every year in the second Saturday in December, they get to go to the Downtown Athletic Club, and they get to stand back there with Marcus Allen and Jim Plunkett and Mike Rozier and all those guys as Heisman Trophy winners. And he'll get to do that. Kyler Murray will get to do that for the rest of his life, which I think is great. But I think after what happened yesterday, he's smart enough to know, maybe I should give baseball a chance. But the thing is, if he wants to try football, he's got to do it now. Because if you want to transition, it's going to be almost impossible for him. Let's say he goes to the A's. He hits 130 rookie short season. They promote him to the Midwest League. He becomes a Beloit snapper, low A. He hits 190. Just because of his signing bonus, they send him to Stockton. And then in the Cal League, he literally hits 036. 3 years in, it's proven that he'll never be a professional baseball player. What football team would want him at that point, at 24 years old? You know how many? Zero. Maybe he could play for the Ottawa Red Blacks. But if he goes to football and he fails, somebody will give him a shot in baseball. I mean, look at Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow got a shot in baseball. And Tim Tebow is obviously not the best player in the New York Mets organization. But he's had his moments. I'm always surprised how big Tim Tebow looks in a baseball uniform, because he, you know, obviously in a football field, he didn't look that big. All right. Let's go back to the Chilton Auto Body text line at 95795. 415 says, Charlie Ward did it right. Heisman Trophy winner of Florida State and made a lot of money in the NBA with the New York Knicks. Yeah, that's one way of looking at it. All right, now, the other game. There are a lot of fighting Irish fans out there who are very upset with how things transpired. And we know that Ian Book was bragged about the only quarterback that had thrown two touchdown passes in every game since he'd come in. We know how good that the defense had been as well for the Irish. And Oklahoma is just a machine. What are you going to do? I mentioned Najee Harris. Najee Harris, the number one recruit in all of California, one of the tops in the nation. Remember when Jim Harbaugh went out there and said, "You're so beautiful, you should be a movie star"? It's literally what Jim Harbaugh told him at Antioch. Everybody wanted him, and he's a part of that team. And probably next year as a junior, he'll probably be the featured tailback. Why would he go to Alabama? Well, because he wants to play for a national title, and he wants to play in the NFL. I have never in my life disparaged against any kid who turns down Cal and Stanford. You know, you get no birthright that if you're in the Bay Area, you have to stay local. You're going to go to the school that's going to put you in the best possible position. I remember speaking to Imani Toomer, of course, who went to De La Salle and Michigan. And, you know, I assumed he wanted to play for a top school that was going to, you know, help him in the draft. And he said for him that it was the Michigan academics. And he was dead serious. He went over the curriculum. He went over the professors. He looked over the degree. He looked over the course study. He looked at the textbooks of every school. You talk about a smart guy. He wanted to make sure he didn't go to a joke school that was going to take tests for him. USC, just kidding, don't panic, Trojan Nation. But we know that there are a lot of schools that are like that as well. But Notre Dame, listen, as a kid, I kind of liked Notre Dame. And then as I got older, I just realized, you know, Notre Dame is a cut above. They'll tell you that themselves. They have their own TV deal. They're not part of a conference. I've always been surprised how Notre Dame fans, you know, say, "Oh, I love Tim Brown. Oh, you're a Raider fan? I hate the Raiders, but I love Golden Domers." What? And it's like, yeah, wherever a Notre Dame guy goes, I love him. I'm like, all right. See, I don't care how much I love it. Like Tony Gonzalez. I love that guy at Cal. As soon as he went to the Chiefs, I hated him. The college affiliations end for me. But the question is now, can Notre Dame build on that and get back? With Clemson and Oklahoma, once again, are you tired of it? This is the third time. You could say the rubber match, as each of them has won once. I think Alabama is going to win this game, but I think it's going to be very, very exciting. I mean, Alabama, you think about it yesterday, when their offense coming back. I mean, at 28-0, when Alabama was up 28-0, I ain't going to lie, I turned it off. There are other things to do, especially after sitting through a soccer game and that first game, which was already boring. 28-0. I figured it was going to be like 62-3 at the half, like that Purdue game the other day against Auburn. But I'll give Oklahoma for some credit for that. I just hope, you know, the Bay Area is getting the title game at Levi's Stadium January 7th. We know if we talk about the Bay Area as a town, the Bay Area is not a college town. Cal and Stanford put academics first. Even though you look at the Pro Bowl, what are there, 5-6 Cal players? Cal and Stanford always give us fantastic NFL players. They just rarely put it together. Stanford lately with Harbaugh and Shaw, obviously, but pedigree-wise, there aren't too many blue chippers that want to play for those schools if they're looking at the NFL. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll take a look at the Niners side of things. We'll have Gary Klein from the LA Times. Doors are open here at Hooters, 7944 Dublin Boulevard in Dublin. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back, 95.7 again.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Thank you for that. Welcome back to the show. Great to have you with us wherever you are listening. Rick Tittle with you live from Hooters, 7944 Dublin Boulevard in Dublin. Feel free to come in. Games are on right now. We got the Jets playing. We got the Giants playing. We got New England playing. We got Dallas playing. We got all sorts of teams. As I look around here on the TVs, Buccaneers, Lions, all your favorites. And, of course, Raiders and Niners will go at it as well. We're looking for Gary Klein. Gary Klein from the Los Angeles Times. When we find him, we will throw him on the airwaves. But it's a good time now for Niner fans to chime in. And, of course, yes, we do cover every team here. But the Rams, that victory over the Cardinals last week was important for them because it snapped a kind of surprising two-game losing streak for them. And beating the Cards 31-9 is what you would expect, unless you're the Niners. But it helped them maintain the seeding and try to get a first round of the playoffs. But in order for the Rams to stay in control, they do have to beat the 49ers. And if they do that, then they will get the second seed. If they lose, then they need the Bears to beat the Vikings, which I think will happen as well. So the Rams just need to take care of business. It's the same scenario almost exactly as we have with the Raiders in Kansas City. Kansas City, all they have to do is just win their last game at home to get that done. And Sean McVay talked about trying to get momentum. He talked about going undefeated in the division. And the I think the difference between the Rams coming back from that that two-game losing streak, as you want, the way they responded, it's just the, you know, Jared Goff, as he continues to grow, you might remember his rookie year on Hard Knocks, absolutely a guy who did not come in with any gravitas. He was not a Mac. He just kind of said, I'll be here in the background watching. I know a lot of people blame Coach Fisher for that, but, you know, Goff was too much. I'm just happy to be here, I thought. Transitioned fantastically well last year. I thought that game, as we were picking games going into the playoffs last year, I thought the easiest game to pick was the Falcons' victory over the Rams. Here were the Falcons coming off a Super Bowl heartbreak at the time, battle-tested, and a Rams team that I thought was kind of happy to be there and saw these bright lights. Even though they were playing at home, I kind of figured that the Rams were going to lose that game. Well, they've been through that now, and they have to respond. Now, Todd Gurley is unavailable. He sat out last week with a knee injury. They're going to monitor him, they say, but I don't think so. He's already gone for 1,251 yards. He's 55 yards away from his career best. He needs one rushing touchdown to equal Eric Dickerson's Rams record. He doesn't need to do that right now. What's best for the Rams and what's best for Todd is what's best for the football team. They don't want to do anything where they're going to put him in harm's way. If they feel like he's at not 100%, there's no way he's going to go. So expect, Niner fans, another heavy dose of the former Cal product. Once again, C.J. Anderson. You know, you bring him in, the former Bronco, and what did he do against Arizona? He rushed for 167 yards. And that's a huge thing to bring in a guy like that. Obviously, the Niners are going to have to deal with Aaron Donald, 3 sacks against Arizona, 19 and a half for the year. It's an NFL record for sacks by a tackle. He's 3 from the overall season record, Michael Strahan, 22 and a half. And, of course, that record is always not asterisks, but a little bit spoiled by the fact that it seemed like the Packers and or just the Brett Favre kind of thought, here, I'll lay down for you. But, you know, that's a decision you make when you pay a guy. And that's a decision the Raiders decided not to do. You know, when you have a transitional, generational talent that you cannot draft again, you will not be able to draft another Khalil Mack, not in the next 10 years. I don't think so. If you do, then bully for you, and I hope you do. It's just too hard to find the Aaron Donalds and Khalil Macks. They're so hard to find. And when you do get one and the guy holds out, well, first of all, when you have a first-round pick, he gets the 5-year deal, second round 4, as we know. But after that 4th year, if they're good, that's when they hold out. That's just what they do. And that's what Donald did, and Donald did that year before, too, and almost didn't accrue another year of playing time. And that's what Khalil Mack did, too. We all knew it was going to happen. And you might say, I'm against it, and I can see why you would be, but that's just the price of doing business. You can either play with the big boys and pay with the big boys, or you can wave a white flag and say, nah, we have too many other problems elsewhere. We want to divvy up the money and give your money to 5 average players. We'd much rather have 5 average or below average players, or we can have 1 fantastic player. And in the case of Khalil Mack, of course, the first ever player to be all pro at 2 positions simultaneously. I don't know if there was a Claude Rains situation. I don't know if I need to get out my metaphysics book. I don't know how you can be all pro at 2 positions as he was, as an outside linebacker and a defensive end. When I put my hand down, I'm all pro. When I put my hand up, I'm all pro. Pretty good. So the choices you have, you get 2 choices when that transitional talent holds out. You either say, like I said, look, I understand this is the way it works. I'm going to pay you. We're going to give you what you're worth, and we're going to sign you for the next 4, 5, 6 years. Or if you want to, you can play hardball. like the Chiefs did with Le'Veon Bell. And you could say, look, you have a contract. You're a grown man. You sign the contract. You're one of the highest paid players at your position. The last thing we're going to do is renegotiate with you while you're under contract. If you don't show up, we're going to fine you every week you're not there. Now, I wouldn't have liked that, but I would have respected the Raiders had they said that. I would have said, you're stupid. You need Khalil Mack. This is what happens in the NFL. This is sort of the unwritten rules. But if you want to stick to your guns and just say you're under contract, we'll talk to you after the season. Like I said, I wouldn't have liked it, but I would have respected it. The decision that you cannot make is just to get rid of that guy. And I don't care what you get back. You get these first-round picks. As I said, what? So you can get another Colton Miller, who will lead the league in sacks allowed. You get another Gerrion Conley, who's always hurt and who's indifferent when he plays. It's just, I think a lot of times people think first-round picks are these treasure chests, and you open them up, and then all your wildest dreams are going to come true when you have that type of pick. Just going back to San Francisco, we're still waiting on Gary Klein if he comes in. So Aaron Donald did get paid, and Aaron Donald said after last week's game, quote, it feels good. It's what you work for and grind for, just to go out there and play the game and try to help your team win it. And that way of doing it, you have success. Anytime you're rewarded and get to be a part of history, it's a special moment. Yes. Well, the 49ers, as we know, going to today's game with a 4-11 record, and a loss would lock in the number two pick. If they win, they'll probably go to 4 and possibly even lower. So that's why some Niner fans say, look, just lose the game. All right. As I said, I understand that will be the silver lining when they lose, and I think they will probably lose. But I don't trust anybody in the NFL to draft the right guy, and even if they do, to even have that guy work out. Kyle Shanahan certainly knows. He's going to have his work cut out against the Rams, and Shanahan was talking about how they're the best in the league in all three phases. And of course, the special teams phase is always the phase where we sort of find out that, a team has sort of put it off to the end of practice. I'm still surprised, even when I go to football practices, how at the end they just kind of throw special teams together. Nobody wants to play special teams. Certainly not starters. You come out after three plays and you're out of breath and you got to run out there on a punt return. I like the guys who embrace it. I don't like drafting guys as special teamers, though. I've seen that before in some drafts. Some guy runs a fast 40, unless it's like a return guy, like a Carlos Francis or someone like that. I don't usually like drafting a guy just because you think he'll be a good gunner on special teams. I'd like you to shoot just a little bit higher than that. But 49er fans, what could you say outside of this season that went well? Well, some things did go well. And you always, as the season ends and it's bad, it's very easy to criticize. And that's what we do because, as football fans, we're disappointed. But as you go through, you think, what went right? Did anything go right? Yeah. You have one of the best tight ends in football. And maybe even a record-breaking tight end in George Kittle. I think the thing that surprises me most about George Kittle is just how fast he is. You don't usually see tight ends catch a pass and then outrace defensive backs. That certainly went well, as George Kittle will be going to the Pro Bowl. You might remember Kyle Juszczyk. Kyle Juszczyk was brought in by John Lynch very early and given some cash. You know, the fullback position has been so ignored in professional football over the last decade at sometimes. But just look at my friend Lorenzo Neal. If you can get a guy like that that can clean out the hole, that's the thing. If you're going to run these spread offenses and you're going to have twins on each side, you're going to have trips on one side, you're going to have an exposed backfield with one running back, I don't care how you drop an X and O. I don't care how if you're facing a 4-3. I don't care if you're facing a 3-4. When you draw that up, no one gets that linebacker. Even if you do a trap, or any, if you want to pull a guard, there's still going to be Mike, Sam, or Will unaccounted for. And then at that point, you're just going to accept the fact that, hey, if this play, if everything goes right, it's 3 yards. That's all we want out of this play. This play is designed to get us 3 yards. We're fine with it. But if you have a fullback, what he's for is to, when that hole opens up and there is a linebacker there, that's what the fullback's for, to clean that guy out. And then you can set loose. So Kyle Juszczyk is a Pro Bowler, and that worked out well. How about Joe Staley putting in another good shift? And when I say shift, I mean the entire season. That went well. Niner fans, are you happy with Mike McGlinchey, who was your first-round pick? Now, when you play at right tackle, there's not going to be as much pressure on you when you have right-handed quarterbacks because you're not protecting a blind side. But any first-round pick, unless you're a quarterback who's learning, even if you're a Super Bowl champ, your first-round pick is usually going to start for you. Then we go to the defensive side of the ball, and I know a lot of people have been down on Robert Saleh, but I thought the Niners actually played on pretty well on defense for most of the season. I do not think Robert Saleh is the problem with this team right now. Fred Warner, obviously, is a keeper. That was a good pick. DeForest Buckner, and a lot of us before the season started kind of thought this is his year to really show up big time, maybe even be a Pro Bowler. Outside of that, not a lot to write home about. Obviously, Richard Sherman was hurt. Richard Sherman, when he played, did okay. DJ Reed, do you like him? Going forward, are you okay with an Antoine Exum? It was too bad that, you know, you think about the injuries that happened. Jaquaski Tart going on IR late at the end of the season. Jimmy Ward going on IR. I didn't think it was wise to move Jimmy Ward to safety and then back to corner. It's easier just to go from corner to safety. Ask Ronnie Lott. Ask Charles Woodson. Then you got to go back. Adrian Colbert, the Adrian Colbert Show. At times, he looked like a steal. And then last year and then this year, he looked like he was overmatched and maybe isn't even an NFL player. But, of course, he had to go on IR as well. Emmanuel Mosley went on IR. And then Akello Witherspoon with a posterior cruciate ligament went on IR. Now, no one's going to feel sorry for you with the defensive backfield. Every NFL team has this battle of attrition through which they have to overcome. But when you go down the line and you think about guys who could have helped, might have helped, I think the best thing that the news that's coming out of the secondary is that Kawan Williams was clear of his knee injury as well. I know that Tavarius Moore is questionable. We'll see if he gets to play. And then if he doesn't, we'll probably see Greg Maben. He could be a guy. Godwin Igwebuki, he could be another guy in. Yeah, I know. It's not a lot of household names inside there right now. And then a Cassius Marsh, if he's not on your team, he's very annoying with his swing kicks and double kicks and things like that. But Cassius Marsh at times showed up. So 49er fans, what are you looking for at the end of this season? It would be great to hear one way or the other. And I think we're giving up on Gary Klein. Gary Klein forgot to call in, and that's fine. Let's go to the – and by the way, lines are open, 888-957-9570. Rick Tittle with you at Hooters, 7944 Dublin Boulevard here, right at the corner of 580 and 680. Come on down. Lines are open. Plenty of TVs with all the early games right now. And the Chilton Auto Body text line is 95795. James from the 510. Rick, what positions do you think we need to address in the draft next year for our Raiders? Well, getting back to the Raiders, listen, it was all about defense for me last year. Obviously, it's going to be all about defense again as well. But you also have to look at the wide receiver position. When you trade Amari Cooper, the Martavis Bryant situation, I thought, was a terrible gamble to take. Even if he was fantastic, he was in a walk year, but he had as many red flags as any player. There's always, if somebody gets in legal trouble, whatever that is, and there are some crimes more heinous than others, obviously, whenever anybody's in legal trouble, that's something that you really have to sit down and say, okay, what are the ramifications? Are you a megalomaniac? Are you an anarchist? Or did you make a stupid mistake through which you have learned? Now, there are some things, obviously, domestic violence, that's a non-starter. I don't even want those guys on the team. I don't know what their excuse is. But some of these things, you know, okay, you had a PED suspension. I'm more than willing to give a guy a chance on a PED suspension because I think that was just a boneheaded mistake. That doesn't mean I'm all for getting you, but I see it. I mean, even the A's took back Bartolo Colon when he got suspended for roids. They go, I will take you, you're clean now. It happens. But whenever a guy cries his way off a team. Sometimes those guys are good. We saw Randy Moss cry his way off the Raiders, and look what he did with the Patriots. Thanks for that, Randy. But whenever a guy refuses to play because a rookie, and in the case in Pittsburgh, Juju Smith-Schuster, when he took most of the playing time of Martavis Bryant at that point, and he said, I don't want to play anymore, and then Mike Tomlin said, we're not going to play you. Okay, I won't show up. And then they suspend him, and he's PED, so he's PED suspension and a crybaby and in a walk year. And then you give Pittsburgh a third-round pick, which they use on Mason Rudolph. And then what do the Raiders do? They cut him. And then they brought him back. That, if that was the worst thing the Raiders did all year, I might be able to forgive that, but that was just one of many things. All right, let's go to Lionel, who is in Fremont. Lionel, you're on 95.7 The Game.
What's up, Tittle? Good morning, Rick. Happy game.
Yeah, baby.
Real quick, you know, you're talking about what kind of Raiders and Niners, especially Niners, or Raiders, whatever, trying to expect what we expect today is pretty much, you know, I'm just expecting to see a good finish for both teams overall. I think a win would damage the Niners' draft position more than the Raiders. I feel like the Raiders really don't need to be that high in the draft. They need to get more picks as they can. They got a lot of holes to fill. The Niners do too, but I feel like the Niners, with their fan base and with Kyle and Lynch is, you know, they've already 2 years in on those 6 years. They kind of need a splash in the draft. I mean, we all know Gruden's holding the keys, so I don't expect him to make a splash at all on a pick. You know, maybe just get more so we kind of just have more options at places. Because, I mean, this defense, is you can make a case. You probably need a whole new defense. But they played better as of late, so I would like more. I guess what I'm saying is I would like more of a win out of the Raiders, not just because I'm a Raider fan. I mean, I do kind of watch both teams and root for both. But I would basically prefer more of a win for the Raiders to have momentum going in and the Niners to keep their draft position. But, you know, going back to athletes that kind of gave, you know, cried away off of teams, I mean, Moss probably was one of the worst. I mean, that was just dreadful to see him just kind of just – the cherry on top was him going to the Patriots. That killed it. But love the show, Ricky. Go Raiders.
Let me ask you this, Lionel. Are you still there? Lionel's not there. Hung up on him. That's fine. I wanted to ask him this. Would you trade to get to number one to get Bosa? Would you trade another number one? So would you give whoever that team is, and I guess it's going to be Arizona, two? Would you give three? That might be a bit much. All right. We do have Gary Klein from the Los Angeles Times. He is the beat writer for the Rams as the 49ers are taking on the Rams. And, you know, you think about lessons learned last year, Gary, with making the playoffs and facing a veteran Atlanta team. What do you think the scope of that experience, of that that playoff loss at home that the Rams learned from and taken to the playoffs this year?
Well, I think more than anything else is just having gone through that experience, they're going to benefit from that. I mean, this was a first-year coach with Sean McVay who did a great job turning the franchise around, but he had never coached in a playoff game. Jared Goff had never played in one. And actually, even some of their more veteran players, guys like Roger Saffold, who'd been with the organization for 9 years, had never been in a playoff game. So I think the fact that they've actually played in one, prepared for one, and lost one will kind of lay the foundation for probably a better performance this time around.
Gurley is going to be out. C.J. Anderson really stepped up. It seems like when a team is going well, they get these guys and they just step in and go from strength to strength. Obviously, a win is going to give you the virtual playoff victory to get that bye. What are some of the things that the Rams are looking at for the 49ers? Obviously, George Kittle is a fantastic young tight end, but you're going to be facing a backup quarterback. How do you think the Rams are scheming it?
Well, I think, you know, Nick Mullins actually provides a little bit more of a challenge for them than the last time they played the 49ers with C.J. Beathard, just because Mullins, I think, is a little bit more mobile. And the Rams have a player in Aaron Donald. You know, they talk about, it's all about trying to win the game, but there's no question they'd like to see him kind of chase that sacks record. So I think you mentioned Kittle. I think the fact that the 49ers have at least from the distance, appear to have been playing hard despite their record, you know, throughout the season, that they're maybe a little bit more of a threat than people give them credit for. I think the last thing Sean McVay wants is a flat, you know, bad performance by his team going into the playoffs, even if they, you know, were to be, even if they were to lose and get a bye. He does not want that kind of situation following them into the postseason as it did last season. So my guess would be, you know, they're going to focus on Mullins and whoever they've got back there running the ball, you know, with Breida out, and just try and get out of here with guys not hurt, but with a victory.
You know, you think about the decision to give Aaron Donald the money, and the Raiders gasped at how much that he got, and then they thought, well, we can't give Khalil Mack that money. And you see what Aaron Donald has done, you know, 19 and a half sacks. You see what Khalil Mack has done, and you see where the Raiders are right now. Is it almost kind of scary if you think about how close the Rams got to maybe just saying, ah, screw it, and trading him, and the regret they would have right now?
Well, I don't think the Rams were ever really considering trading him. I mean, I think all along they felt they were going to get it done. And remember, you know, the Rams are in a little bit of a different situation with Jared Goff basically earning, and I don't want to say nothing because he's earning plenty of money, but relative to how well he's played this season in terms of a starting quarterback in the NFL, the Rams, you know, it's not like they had a $25, $30 million quarterback on offense and had to figure out how to pay Aaron Donald. They've been planning for this for a long time. They were confident all along that it would get done. It was just a matter of when and what the number would be. And, yeah, as you mentioned, I mean, as soon as Oakland saw that, you know, Mack was off to the Bears. But I think the Rams all along had budgeted to have Aaron Donald, you know, as the anchor of their defense. And it worked out. But again, I think the Goff factor more than anything else has allowed the Rams to do what they did this offseason in terms of acquiring guys like Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib and Ndamukong Suh. Brandon Cooks gets a big extension. None of that I don't think is possible if you don't have a young quarterback who's under control for a couple more years.
You know, it's funny because with Goff, I saw him play many times in person at Cal. He's a local kid from Novato, Marin Catholic, and just came in as a freshman. I never questioned his toughness. He got really beat up at Cal, and then later on, you know, had a fantastic career in the Pac-12. And then at the Combine, people raving about how he was the only quarterback throwing before guys would even make their break. And I said, this is the guy. He has to be the number one overall pick. And then we watched Hard Knocks, and he kind of, I don't know if he was shy, but he was letting the Mannions and the Keenans go past him, and it was almost like he was just happy to be there. Some people say, well, it was Sean McVay who came in and Fisher left. I kind of put a little bit on Goff. I think he was a little bit timid. When did you see that switch to, hey, listen, I'm the man here. I'm the one who's the top pick.
Well, I think once he got an opportunity to start, even though he was not doing well relative to how people thought a number one overall pick should play, he attempted, I think, to assert himself a little bit. But I think he was also, you know, mindful of the fact that everyone was watching him. All eyes were on him, most especially from his teammates, to see what he was made of. And I think that first season was just an attempt to kind of establish himself that he was capable. And, you know, we can all look back at that and say, you know, the system he was in, and not just exclusive to Jeff Fisher, I'm talking about the whole offensive staff, was just not, that was not a very efficient group that was working and that was, you know, bringing out the best in what he can do. And, you know, by luck, whatever, however you want to call it, for the Rams to hire Sean McVay and for Goff to get the opportunity to play for him, a guy who's, you know, a quarterback's coach, in an offense that takes advantage of his talents, and now in year two with an organization that went out and got the pieces, you know, to complement him, now we're seeing him flourish. So we'll see. I think going just back to the start of our conversation, you know, in terms of the playoffs, I think last year Goff was noticeably nervous in that first game against Atlanta, and I don't know that you can blame him as a second-year guy playing in your first playoff game. So we'll see if he's can take the next step in terms of growth and kind of get back to, or not get back to, but establish himself now as a seasoned guy who's capable of winning playoff games.
And I think he will. Rick Tittle with Gary Klein of the LA Times. Just some more, couple more questions for the Rams beat writer. You know, when the Rams got Marcus Peters, you know, we all thought, wow, what a coup. You know, and this is a kid out of Oakland that even in the draft, people had some quote-unquote red flags. Andy Reid took a chance, and then Andy Reid at one point suspended him, wasn't wearing his socks, and they finally washed their hands. And this is a guy who was Defensive Rookie of the Year and 20 interceptions. I think a lot of people, what was it, about a month ago, that game against the Saints when Michael Thomas went crazy on him, some people said, well, he doesn't fit into Phillips' scheme. I know he confronted a fan a couple weeks ago. From the outside looking in, you might say Marcus Peters isn't having his best season. But you watch the Rams every day. What's your assessment on him?
Well, I don't think he's having his best season, certainly not the kinds of seasons that, you know, his statistics indicated he might produce. But on the other hand, I would say he is playing in a new system, you know, and Wade Phillips is kind of trying to, I think, still to figure out how to best place these guys. He did not have the benefit. It looked like at the beginning of the season that he was going to have the benefit of playing a full season with Aqib Talib on the other side, which I think really plays to Peter's strength, because you can put Talib as your one-on-one matchup guy against guys like Mike Thomas, and Marcus Peters can do more of what he's accustomed to doing, which is freelancing in more of kind of zone coverage. So I don't know that we saw some stuff, I think, this season where Marcus Peters was exposed, but then he's also made, you know, some plays. So I think we won't know until the whole season is played out, till the playoffs are done, and see what kind of, you know, what he does there. But I don't think it would be unfair to say that to this point he hasn't been the superstar kind of acquisition that people had envisioned. But I don't think he's played poorly the entire season. He's had some definitely some games, as you mentioned, against New Orleans where it definitely stuck out.
Yeah, and listen, everybody has a bad day. It's a lot of times a bad day just doesn't happen in front of a national television audience. Looking at the defense, you know, right around the middle of the pack, against the run, not fantastic. Now, the 49ers are certainly banged up in every area. If attacking the Rams defense today, Kyle Shanahan and company, how would you do it, Gary?
I think you mentioned, you know, you're right on it. They just have not been a very good run defense team. I mean, when you run right at them, run right up the middle, there have been some teams that have been very successful that way. And in terms of keeping that, sustaining drives, keeping the ball out of the hands of an offense that early in the season was pretty much unstoppable, that was, to me, looked like a formula for success. So I think that's kind of, I wouldn't be surprised if Kyle Shanahan, you know, engages in that against the Rams. I don't know that you necessarily, because they, if you start passing the ball and you allow them to get that rush going with Dante Fowler acquired, you know, at the trade deadline, that's now kind of, I think, made them better. With Aaron Donald pursuing history and Ndamukong Suh still a solid player, I think, you know, you're kind of asking for trouble. And you're giving guys like Marcus Peters and Aqib Talib opportunities to create the kind of turnovers that make it easy for the offense. So, if the 49ers can run the ball, that'd be a good way to do it, especially if you're running right at Aaron Donald and some of those interior linemen.
You know, as much as we say the Bay Area is the NFL toilet bowl with two terrible teams, you could say L.A. is the top. I mean, you got two fantastic teams. The Rams, of course, obviously had that Los Angeles pedigree. There were still a lot of fans from their old days. They're going to be getting their new palace, and, of course, they'll be sharing it with the Chargers down there in Carson. The best thing the Chargers could have ever done was play like they're playing to get some new fans. But, you know, going into this season, a lot of people said, look, the Chargers, all the fans are from other teams. It's a disaster. The Spanos has got it wrong. We're up here. What's the feeling like down there towards the Rams and the Chargers from your view?
They're still making inroads. You know, this as much as the longtime fans, and there's, like, as you mentioned, there certainly are some, but this is an area that was without professional football for more than 20 years. And a lot of the fans down here became 49ers fans. A lot of them remain Raiders fans for when the Raiders were down here, the Packers, the Eagles, the Bears, you name it. You know, the LA fan base in terms of pro football really got segmented. And I think the Rams, with their run to the playoffs last year, captured interest. The moves they made in the offseason really heightened that with high expectations. And now here, you know, they're ready to at least start a playoff run. If they make a deep playoff run, if they, you know, were able to get to the Super Bowl or something, I think that obviously ups the ante. I think the Chargers, despite how well they're doing and the excitement of a team with some of those players, you know, they're going to have an uphill battle here in L.A. When they get into that stadium, they're going to be the second tenant. Right now they're playing in, you know, a soccer stadium, and they've got a quarterback, obviously maybe a Hall of Fame guy in Phillip Rivers, but he's not going to be around very long. So I think it remains to be seen how it plays out for the Chargers. From a financial standpoint, it was a great move, I think, by the Spanos family. From a building a fan base situation, I think it's going to be difficult. Because even the Rams, I think, face that here in L.A. with LeBron James and the Dodgers, with USC football. If it's doing well, it's kind of a, you know, a different market. And we'll see. But I think the Rams have made the kind of headline-grabbing moves and now have played well enough to maybe turn some of those fans that were rooting for the Pittsburgh Steelers or the Green Bay Packers. They may have more of a local interest.
And finally, Gary, if everything holds to form, the road to the Super Bowl in the NFC is going to go through the Big Easy again. The lessons the Rams learned from Thomas and Breeze and some of those other guys, do you see it? Now I'm jumping ahead, obviously, but do you think that would be a good game, or do you think, man, the Saints are just too good this year?
Well, I think it would be a great game, simply because, you know, the Rams left there feeling actually really good about themselves. I mean, not with the loss, but the fact that they were down by 21 and came back and had a chance to win the game, or at least in position to win that game in that dome with that fan base against the Saints team that played fantastic, and, you know, with a receiver that had a record-setting day. So I think they actually came out of that game very, very confident that they could play well if they had to go back there. Now, with, you know, a possible NFC championship at stake, with that crowd even more amped up, with Drew Brees, who has plenty of experience, and Sean Payton, who's been through that experience, you know, maybe the Saints are even better. But I don't think the Rams are intimidated by going in there. They'd much rather play the Saints outdoors at the Coliseum, but they know that's not going to happen. So to go to New Orleans is going to be a challenge no matter what. But the fact that they played pretty well against them the last time, I think, gives them confidence that the second time around they can possibly beat them.
All right. First things first, the Niners and the Rams, Week 17. And we've been speaking with Gary Klein from the Los Angeles Times. Great to have Gary on again. Gary, and enjoy the game, enjoy the playoffs, and hopefully we'll catch up with you soon.
I hope to talk to you next time the Rams and Niners are getting together.
All right, good stuff. Rick Tittle with you. And the whole Spanos situation of moving to L.A. is just, I mean, you have that whole San Diego market to yourself. When you put something on the ballot and say, give me a new stadium or I'm leaving, we know how it works in California. You're not going to get a penny of public money. He knew what he was doing. Why anyone would want to go to L.A. to be second fiddle? Well, you go there for the money. As Gary just said, he made a fantastic financial decision. It was sort of like, why? I remember when Sterling moved the San Diego Clippers to L.A. Why? Why do you want to be second banana? Okay, so San Diego isn't New York City. It's a pretty great town. You had it all to yourself. But that's not how these guys look. These guys, when they look at, so they wear contact lenses with dollar signs on them and euros and pounds and yen and all that as well. All right. We are live. I say we and my engineer, Jess, we are here at Hooters in Dublin. It's easy to find because the street is Dublin. Dublin Boulevard, 7944, right as 580 and 680 converge, or as I call it, where Contra Costa and Alameda counties meet, kind of. All right, let's get back. We'll talk a little Warriors. We'll talk a little Raiders. We'll talk a little NFL. Hot stove. We got a lot to get to before Raiders pregame, which I'll have. Chris Townsend will join me from Kansas City. And then, of course, Brent Musburger and Lincoln Kennedy will have the call. We'll have postgame as well. So come on down to Hooters. Great food deals. Lots of TVs with every game in the National Football League. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back. 95.7 The Game.